So 1825. Qualities of the ages. In the Krita age, Dharma is four-footed and entire, and so is truth. Nor does any gain accrue to men by unrighteousness. So that means Dharma is four-footed, means it's truthfulness, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness. And nor does any gain accrue to men by unrighteousness, means no one follows any occupation that's not lawful. So because of that, then the whole thing works. So because all four of those are in place, then the whole thing works nicely in the Satyuga. In the other three ages, by reason of unjust gains, agama, Dharma is deprived successively of one foot, and through the prevalence of theft, falsehood, and fraud, the merit of men is diminished by one-fourth in each age. Right, so we see is that their methods of how they gain things, then that makes the difference. Because of that, then they are deprived. Does that make some sense? It's because the people are taking up these things of theft, falsehood, and fraud, then and unjust gain. So it'll at some point later, it's when it gets to the section on purity of men, then it says the most important thing of purity is how you gain your money. If you gain your money by unjust means, then that will make everything else impure. So you can see here is that in the Satyayuga, no one gains any money by any way that's against the religious duties. But in the other ages, they do, so therefore then everything diminishes. Does that make some sense? The life of mortals mentioned in the Veda, the desired results of sacrificial rites, and the supernatural power of embodied beings, are fruits proportioned among men according to the character of the age. Right, so their lifespan, then the results that they get from the sacrificial rites, and how much power they have. Because we see in other ages that they had so much power it was there. They could do so many different things. But all that is reduced by the character of the age. So when the kings, their rule is improper, and the people therefore gain money according to improper means, then all this goes down. Their results of their sacrifice, their lifespan, and their particular potency. In the Krita age, the chief virtue is declared to be the performance of austerities. In the Treta, divine knowledge. In the Dvapara, performance of sacrifices. In the Kali, liberality alone. Okay, so then what happens is generally these two switch once in a day of Brahma only. Like in this the Kali Yuga that we're in, it's following the switch. So Dvapara and the Treta, their duties have switched. Generally, Dvapara is first, then Treta, right? Because Dvapara means two, and Treta means three. So, but in the time when Krishna himself comes, Swayam Krishna comes, then it switches. So then Dvapara comes after Treta, and so there's a reversal of the method of perfection. Right? Does that make some sense? Because when Krishna comes, because then he comes in Dvapara. Yeah. So then coming in the Dvapara Yuga, then right after that he'll come in the Kali Yuga. Otherwise it'd be too much of a gap. You know, if he comes in Treta and then comes again in Kali Yuga. So this time it's right next to each other. So it's naturally closer. Because there it says here, Treta, divine knowledge, and Dvapara, the performance of sacrifices. So if it was performance of sacrifices, then that would have to be the prominent element in that age. So that's the wrong time for that. Because then that's more along the line of the, you know, the big rituals and everything like that. So that matches very nicely with Ramachandra, but not with Krishna. So Krishna, then we see is that the divine knowledge is the thing. And in that, then, paravidya means transcendental knowledge. Paravidya. So in Dvapara, it comes in the form of the Pancharatra. In the Pancharatra, then you worship the Lord through the Pancharatrik process. So it's ekayana, that you're focused specifically only on the Lord. You're following Vedic ritual, but only those rituals that are connected directly with the Lord, not things that are separate, not karmakanda. Does that make any sense? So then that fits more naturally with worshipping Krishna. Because then all it has to do is residents of Vrindavan have to be absorbed in him, and they're performing the Yuga Dharma like that. Otherwise, they'd have to be out doing big sacrifices and worshipping Vishnu. So it wouldn't match as well. Does that make sense? So topic 1B, the origin of the sacred law. The God-given duties of men. But in order to protect this universe, he, the most resplendent one, assigned separate duties and occupations to those who sprang from his mouth, arms, thighs, and feet. Right, that means the Brahmins sprang from the mouth, the Kshatriyas from the arms, the Vaishyas from the thighs, and the Shudras from the feet. Right, that's according to the Varna Dharma. Because the mouth means is that's where you speak from, or you eat on behalf of the Lord. Right? It means that the Brahmins, the one feeds them for Shraddhas, for other things. Anything offered to Brahmins through the mouth of Brahmins is considered to be even a better sacrifice than, you know, so many of these other, the Paka Yagyas and all these other different things that are Yagyas done at specific times, like this, like that. The arms, the Kshatriyas, because they protect the body. The thighs and that, because, you know, it means the middle section of the body, that's where all your economics is developed from. And then the legs, the feet, then that's what carries everything else around. It means all the others are able to expand and perform duties in great ways because the feet are able to carry them around. Does that make some sense? So everybody has an important part. So that's the essential element, is that the Daivavarnashram system that this is talking about is sprung from the Lord. Therefore, we don't make a distinction between them, right? As a way is that one's better than the other. But each has their nature, right? Hands don't eat, mouths do, right? Hands don't walk, feet walk, right? So that's the whole hands don't digest, feet don't digest, mouths don't digest, stomachs digest. So therefore, the stomach then provides the nourishment for the whole rest of the system. So one's not better than the other, but each has their specific function. That's the important element. See, because of the false ego and the desire for prestige, therefore then it is a big thing is made out of that the Brahman is higher, the Shudra is lower. But in the Vedic system, the point is everybody's happy doing what they want. Right? That's just the way it is, you know. Like it's just like so many people go, you know, sit down at a big feast. Everybody eats what they like according to the proportion that they like. They don't eat it because someone else likes it, right? You eat what you like, and you're happy, even though someone may say, "Well, this preparation is superior to that preparation." If you like the preparation, what do you care if it's superior or inferior? Right? So if everyone's situated according to their natural engagement, they're satisfied, they're happy. Problem is in this age, people aren't happy because they're not situated. So therefore, then you have to find happiness somewhere. So you try to find it through the opulences. Right? So therefore, position or prestige is one of them. So then there's a fight over that. You know, over influence like this. Everyone's trying to be more beautiful than the other. So, you know, these things is the problem. So because of this, then things don't work. So it then turns into a thing of, oh, the Brahmins that touch shooters the bottom. No. It's just that to make it work, the feet have to go where the head says, or where the arms need them to go for protection, or where the stomach needs to go for economic development. Like if the feet sit here, and lunch is out there, and the feet won't get up and go out there, then, you know, then no eating goes on, you know, and no digestion goes on, so then the feet don't benefit. So therefore, the feet have to carry you to where the lunch is. If there's some, you need to protect your body, the arms have to do it. Your feet have to move in such a way to facilitate the arms doing the protection. You know, or the mouth has to speak or eat, the feet have to go to where those things are going on. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole point. You know, and it's the mouth that directs the arms and the stomach and the legs how to do their duties. So it's just, it's a natural setup. But the problem is because of this false ego, due to ignorance, there's this desire for prestige. Therefore, people won't accept their natural duties or where it goes and what is the natural interactions. Because if that's accepted, it's automatic. Right? If it's accepted, it just works. And then there's a nice interaction. So it's not a big deal. It's a matter of just all these different things go together. You know, just like you have a recipe, there's a natural proportion. Each item adds to the thing. You want to make a lemon juice, right? You need lemons, right? You need water, you need some sugar, right? Now, the water could say, hey, without the water, I mean, you know, okay, the preparation is called lemon juice, but why it's called lemon juice? Why it's not called lemon-flavored water? Right? Like that. So the water could make a big stink about it. It's like, you know, okay, then you just go into the glass yourself, Mr. Lemon Juice, you know, and then you see if people like you. No, then you're a medicine. It's only because of me, the water. Therefore, then people glorify and call this lemon juice. But it doesn't work like that. Everybody has the point, you know, what they do. And if that's there, it works very nicely. You have a nice preparation. Everything works. Otherwise, due to false ego, then everything can go upside down. Each one can claim they're more important than the other. You know, that's the problem. Is that due to false ego, then these things happen. When everything's just supposed to fit in. So here we see, just in the last thing, then the quality is the age. Then we see is that the important thing is, due to the people's qualities, you have an age. If the people have good qualities, you have a higher age. They have bad qualities, you have a lower age. It's not just that the Kali Yuga itself degrades. If the people all get together, chant Hare Krishna and focus on serving and pleasing the Lord, then you have a golden age in Kali Yuga. Right? Satya Yuga is there in Kali Yuga. Right? That's the whole principle. So it's actually a matter of the consciousness of the people like that. Right? It's natural that in that particular age, people with that consciousness are born then so that they get the results. But if they decide to improve that, then they can change the age. So the real thing is the age is created by the consciousness of the people. So you can't just blame it on the age. The reason that one's born in that age is because one has that mentality of that age. So it's not the age's fault. You know, like sometimes you hear it said, you know, oh, it's Kali Yuga, what can you do anyway? No. You know, the point is we're born in Kali Yuga because we have a Kali Yuga brain. You know, we have Kali Yuga consciousness. That's why we're born now. So now it's a matter of, are you happy with that? You want to stay like that? Oh, I was walking along. Oh, I tripped. I fell in the ditch. What can I do? So I'll just lay here the rest of my life in the ditch. No, you get up, you go, take a bath, put on clean clothes, and then move on. Right? So that's the point, is that by changing the consciousness, you change the age. So the whole idea is if you pick a higher level of consciousness, then naturally everything goes up. Like that. So that's the whole idea is of the Dharma Shastra, is through good qualities then to create an upliftment. Right? So the situation in which you can perform your devotional service improves. The situation meaning, you know, the consciousness. Okay. So now then the next is to describe the duties of the four varnas. To Brahmins he assigned teaching and studying the Veda, sacrificing for their own benefit and for others, giving and accepting of alms. Right, so you see there's six items here. Patana patana, yajana yajana, dana pratigraha. Is that you're teaching, studying the Veda and teaching it. Right? You're sacrificing for yourself, you're sacrificing for others. You're giving charity and accepting alms. Right? So we can see there is studying, sacrificing yourself, and giving in charity, that's for your own benefit. Right? Teaching, sacrificing for others, and accepting of alms, then we see that that is for others' benefit, that creates economic development for yourself. It means, in other words, you get charity. Does that make some sense? By studying, you benefit yourself. By sacrificing for yourself, you benefit yourself. And by charity, then you get merit. Right? But now if you teach others, you sacrifice for others, then you receive alms, because they will give dakshin. Right? So in this is both the ashram and the varna duties of a Brahmin. You understand? You see that? That's why you'll see in the Manusmita, the Brahminical economics is not separately described other than ashram dharma. Because the ashram dharma, it has two sides. Right? Somebody has to study, someone has to teach. Right? Someone, you have to do sacrifice. That means you're doing it or someone's doing it on your behalf. Right? You have to give in charity. That means someone has to be receiving it. Right? Does that make some sense? So the Brahmins are teaching. You want to have to study the Veda, the Brahmins are teaching it. You have to perform a sacrifice, the Brahmins are doing it for you. You have to give in charity, the Brahmins are accepting that charity. Right? Does that make some sense? See how that works? Okay, so then in that, then we'll see is then it goes down into the next. The Kshatriya commanded to protect the people, to bestow gifts, right? So charity. To offer sacrifices, that means for himself, to study the Veda, but not to teach it, right? And to abstain from attaching himself to sensual pleasures. Right? So you see the bestowing gifts, offering sacrifice, studying the Veda, this is common. And extra, but he doesn't teach it, he doesn't sacrifice for others, he doesn't accept charity. Right? So then on top of this, then specific for the Kshatriyas to protect the people and to abstain from attaching himself to sensual pleasure, because he has the most facility, so you have to endeavor to not attach yourself to it. Right? The Brahmin is not trying to attach himself to it, but he doesn't keep anything. He may have, but it's not his main thing. His main thing is to study and teach. His austerity is studying. Right? Because he does that the most, therefore then the other things stay in line. Right? Because so much knowledge is there, then he applies that in what he's doing, then he gets good realization. Right? But for the king, because he's so absorbed in these things, he has to then control the senses to make sure that, you know, things are going nicely, so that his knowledge is applied. Because controlling the senses, you can only do that through knowledge. Right? So the Brahmin has to teach, so knowledge is being used. He has to explain it, so then he has to make it practical. That's the meaning of Kshatriya, one who can take the scripture and make it visible to you. Right? It means you hear, and it becomes perceivable to you. Right? In other words, you're taking the scriptures, they're giving very esoteric points, and you can perceive them in the gross nature. Does that make sense? So the Brahmin has to do that. But the Kshatriya, because that's not what he's doing, therefore by controlling his senses, you know, studying the scriptures, he gets knowledge, he gives charity, he offers sacrifice, so his merit increases. He protects the people, that's his specific duty, that's his economics. And therefore he tries to control his senses by pulling them in. Does that make some sense? So his economics is protecting the people. And then for his own benefit, he gives charity, offers sacrifices, he studies the Veda, and he controls his senses. That makes sense. The Vaishya, to tend cattle, to bestow gifts, to offer sacrifices, to study the Veda, to trade, to lend money, and to cultivate land. Right, so we see of here, tend cattle, that's the main occupation. Then he has charity, sacrifice, and study the Vedas. So that's also the common ashram duties. You know, just like the Kshatriya and Brahmin. So for the Dwijas, charity, sacrifice, and study the Veda. Right? Is always there. That's why it says in the Gita that these three are always charity, sacrifice, and austerity. Because studying the Veda is considered the highest austerity. Right? Those three must always be reformed. Austerity doesn't mean that you're standing in your head or something like that. Austerity means your performance of your duties. Just like for us, then following the four regulative principles. That is our austerity. Studying the scriptures. That's the austerity. Or the difficulties taken in performance of one's duties. Right? Does that make some sense? Like that. One occupation only the Lord prescribed to the Shudra, to serve without resentment these other three varnas. So he may do these other things, right? But he just has to assist in doing them, and by that he will benefit. You know? Does that make some sense? It's just like, okay, one may say, no, but they should do themselves and get their own benefit. But it's just like, okay, in the family, the king is doing the yajna, right? We don't hear of his kid doing the yajna. But his kid is getting the benefit. Right? His wife is getting the benefit. His dependents get the benefit. So the Shudra, by assisting, they get the benefit. In other words, dependents always get benefit. Like that. So since they're dependent, therefore they get benefit. So if they help in the check, it means they'll be helping. It means he's going to give cows in charity. He's going to go out and get the cows himself? No, his Shudras bring the cows. Right? He's going to perform the sacrifice. So much arrangements has to be done, setting up, baking things, moving things, this, that. The Shudras do that. They're getting benefit. Right? And in the study, they will hear, you know, things. They will hear things being spoken and this and that. So they get benefit by hearing the discussions and topics and all that. So then they're getting benefit there. And then if they're helping Vaishyas, they're helping them tend cattle or to trade or to lend money or cultivate land. And Kshatriyas are helping to protect the people. Right? If they're assisting Brahmins, then they'll be helping the Brahmins in doing their sacrifices or their charity or their teaching or... Does that make some sense? So that way they always get benefit. That's why it says just this one is given, just to assist. And they'll automatically be engaged in all these other activities. Like that. And that automatically is said. Okay, so then the point being here is that is that everybody has their specific duties, but this study, charity, and austerity is the common duty for all. Right? That's the common duty for all. Then everybody has their specific duty. You know? The Brahmins to teach, the Kshatriyas to protect the people, the Vaishyas to tend cattle or other economic duties, and the Shudra to assist. Right. Is that clear? So it's quite it's a very simple system. Details are vast, but the system is very simple. So then, glory of the Brahminical order. Of created beings, the most excellent are said to be those which are animated. That means of all living entities, then you have those who are moving and those who are not. So those who are moving are considered the best. Of the animated, those that subsist by intelligence. Right? That there's so many moving around, but there's ones that with their brain figure out how to maintain themselves. So we see that up in the higher animals, like that. Of the intelligent mankind, right? So mankind is the best out of all those intelligent animals. Of men, the brahmanas. than of Brahmanas, those learned in the Veda. Because he may be Brahminical nature, but those who know the Veda, that's considered better. But that's meaning they are Brahminical by nature. Right? We're not talking here of just someone who has knowledge but no character. We're talking about the character and the knowledge. Of those of the learned, those who recognize the necessity in man of performing prescribed duties. Right? It means those who understand what is our duty? How we're supposed to act to please the Lord. Those who recognize that are even better than just those who have knowledge. Of those who possess this knowledge, those who perform them. So you may know that this is what should be done and can describe it very elaborately, but of those who know that, those who actually do it, that's even better. And of the performers, those who know Brahman. Right? And so those who perform the duties and know the Lord, they're the best. Right? So we can see here is then it just naturally comes up. In other words, the top is one who performs his duties to please the Lord. Right? That's the top. Because you can't perform your duties unless you know what they are. Right? And you won't know what they are unless you inquire. So that makes mankind. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So someone who inquires is a human. Of those who inquire, then those who study and know. Of those who know, those who perform. Of those who perform, those who know the Lord. Otherwise, you may have great knowledge. If you don't know the Lord, not very useful. Not very useful. The very birth of a Brahman is an eternal incarnation of the sacred law, for he is born to fulfill the sacred law, and thus comes to realize Brahman. Right? So, in other words, he's supposed to follow the law, give the example of the law, and know the Lord. So the Brahman's supposed to be on this level. That's what he's for. The Brahminical Varna is made for this purpose. To know the law, practice the law, teach the law, and by this way, then realize the Lord. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole idea, is that's why this whole work is being spoken. Because the sages who have knowledge, and they're probably practicing, but they want to know the Lord. So they've come to Brahma. Right? So that's an invocation. So here. Be pleased, O Divine One, to declare to us precisely and in due order the sacred laws of each of the four chief varnas and of the intermediate ones. So that's that they practice the law. Right? For Thou alone, O Lord, knowest the purport, in other words, the rites and knowledge of the soul taught in connection with and for the purpose of realizing the Supreme Existent, who is unknowable and unfathomable. In other words, the law is there simply to know the Lord. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's the whole point. The Brahmins are considered the best because they practice the law and they know the Lord. Right? So that's the purpose. So if it's something less than that, whatever, they're respected. But the purpose of the Brahminical order is to come to that. So that means the Brahmins are the best because that's actually the purpose of the whole Varnashram system. One is supposed to know the Lord through the performance of one's duties. Right. Does that make some sense? So now, of course, there are two levels of duties, conditional and constitutional. Right? Manu is specifically dealing with conditional. But the constitutional is rendering your activities for the Lord's pleasure. So that's why then this is considered, those who know Brahman are higher. Because those who are performing the duties are performing their conditional duties perfectly. You know, they're serving the Lord by the performance of their Varnashram duties. But the constitutional nature is that you're performing your activities to please the Lord. So it pleases the Lord, that is your activities. Does that make sense? So sometimes it may be in line with your conditional, sometimes it's not. Because the point is whatever pleases the Lord according to that situation, that's what's done. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes we have these things where it appears that the Vaishnavas don't always follow the rules. But they are following the rules. They're pleasing the Lord. Right? They're pleasing him directly through his devotional service. And whenever it's favorable, then indirectly through the performance of their varnashram duties. Does that make some sense? So that's why we have this thing of sometimes it appears that we've stepped out of the whole system. Because it's a matter of moving back and forth between conditional and constitutional. So if someone says we don't care for the rules, great, as long as you can function in the constitutional position all the time and never at any time deal with the conditional. Because if you deal with the conditional, then how are you going to engage it? Unless it's by the rules. Right? Vaidhi Bhakti, or not say Vaidhi Bhakti, Sadhana Bhakti engages the conditional nature. Right? So that conditional nature can be either engaged according to the, just by the authority of the rules, that's Vaidhi Bhakti, or due to a taste for following those rules and pleasing the Lord through that as spontaneous devotional service. When you like to do it, that's your impetus. You like to serve the Lord. Rather than you're serving the Lord because you're supposed to, and you like doing that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the difference is you like serving the Lord because you're supposed to. You know, you're supposed to serve the Lord, you like that, you do it. The other is you just like to do it. Does that make some sense? It means it's just like you want to please the Lord, and so going to the kirtan is pleasing, and so therefore you're very pleased to go to the kirtan. The other is you like kirtan, whether it's, you know, you're supposed to do it or not. You just like kirtan. That makes some sense.
The second one is the best?
Yeah, it means that naturally you have a taste for it. You have a taste for it.
So that means even on the first stages of spiritual life, one can manifest some kind of, you know, this, how to say, readiness, you know, this original, I mean, like some kind of raga, nuga, you know, some kind
of
symptoms.
Yeah, but it'd be one, and just like you see all new bhaktas are generally on the spontaneous devotional platform when it comes to eating prasad. You know, that's definitely they all, that's... But the point is when it's prominent in everything that you do, that spontaneity, then it's called spontaneous devotional service. Because one naturally has attractions, otherwise you wouldn't be in devotional service, so you're attracted by something. You know? So something you like, you know, even if it's just the, you know, the knowledge of it, you like to read. Not because you're supposed to read, you like to read. So you can say that's spontaneous, but you see in all their other activities, then it's just according to the book. So you see what's prominent. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you have just, you know, a drop of lemon juice in a lot of water, it has a slight fragrance of lemon. So you call it lemon-flavored water. Right? But if you put more lemon, then you call it lemon juice. Because that's the prominent flavor. But in both, it's always there. The spontaneous aspect, you know, the happiness that's there, the attachment that's there, the taste that's there, the, you know, following the red, the association, all those are always there. It's just the proportion that they're there and how often they manifest. If they're constantly when one of them becomes constantly manifest, then it's called by that nature. You know what I'm saying? Whatever is the highest level that's manifest is called by that. You're always, you know, absorbed in, you know, faith, you know, then it's called Shraddha. When you always take up the association of devotees, it's not that Shraddha disappears. No, it's still there, but the next higher, that becomes prominent. You're always with devotees. So the next is you're trying to follow the rules and regulations, Vajna Kriya. Right? Anartha Nivritti, you're trying to remove these, the difficulties. Or Nishta, when the prominent thing that's always there is your stableness. You know, and in that you have a little taste, you have a little attachment, you know, now and again, you know, it's very ecstatic. It's the same in all these other levels. You know, it's not that the person who's just on the path of Shraddha is not performing any of the elements of Bhajana Kriya, or doesn't get a taste for, you know, hearing and chanting or that. But that's small. It's just occasional that comes. You know what I'm saying? So the prominent thing is the one is there. So when that steadiness is there, that's the prominent thing. And there is some taste. Then when taste becomes the main thing, it's not that they're not steady or they're not following the rules. No, that's there. And it's not that there's not some attachment. That becomes the prominent thing. The ones below it are always there. But it's the highest level of what's stable. You know what I'm saying? That's how you judge the level you're at. Just like, let's say, you're practicing mridanga. Okay? So you can play the beat. You're given a practice beat. Okay, let us say that you can play it at the speed of 10 of those beats per minute without making any mistake. Right? But you can, for a few seconds, play one or two of them really, really fast. And then you start making mistakes. So now the natural thing is the student thinks, I'm actually on that faster level. But the teacher knows, no, they're on 10 beats a minute level. Because it's the level that you're stable at that you don't make any mistakes in. Though a little bit of the higher is there, and automatically the other beats that you were playing, practicing before, are automatically there. You're able to play those at a proper speed. Does that make some sense? Yeah? So then, the whole idea here is that, one's occupational duties are for the purpose of pleasing the Supreme Lord. Like that. That's actually the purpose of the whole system. Right? The whole universe is made so that there will be living entities that take up their occupational duties to please the Lord. Mm-hmm. Does that make some sense? Unfortunately, that's the lesser of them, and the greater of them are the, you know, immovable living entities, or like that, or movable, you know, like that.
I heard before one elevates on such level when he performs his activity just to satisfy the Lord's desires. He can start from those by offering, you know, results of his activity to the Lord. It's like karma samarpana.
So anybody can offer the results to the Lord. Why one has to be elevated to do that? You just have to do your activities for the Lord's pleasure. That's offering your activity.
I mean, we can understand that any activity in spiritual life is meant for Lord's satisfaction. Mm-hmm. But artificially, we cannot, you know, just to say, okay, so I'm doing this for satisfaction.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that's one of the ways you could look at it, yeah.
So we can just perform our duties and we can offer our results of our duty.
Well, that's the meaning here. Mm. For he is born to fulfill the sacred law and thus comes to realize Brahman. Through following the sacred law in relationship to pleasing the Lord. Right? If it's not in relationship to pleasing the Lord, you won't realize. It means you can, on one level, realize that we're not this body and we're not from this material world, so you can come to the liberated platform without devotion. That you can get. But we're looking at this, when we say realize Brahman, we're not talking about liberation. We're talking about coming to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, which is achieved by devotion. Right? Mukti is one thing. Like that. So the process looks the same. Performing activities in knowledge will bring you to that platform of the Brahman platform. But there's two aspects of the Brahman platform. One is mukti, means you don't know the Lord, and you don't get any farther, and you're not actually liberated. The Brahma-Bhuta means you actually are liberated, and because you know the Lord, because you have devotion. So the activities performed in knowledge with devotion will bring you to that platform. Does that make sense? So that's what one is trying to get to. and the composition of the sacred law, 1B13. In order to clearly settle his duties and those of other castes according to their order, wise Manu, sprung from the self-existent, composed these institutes of the sacred law. Okay, so here he's saying that Manu here, this Brahma, who he's talking about, composed these laws. Right? He composed them, but Brahma before, either that or coming after, will say that the laws came from Vishnu. Right? He's composed what he heard from the Lord. Right? So this, you know, it's just like Vyasadeva, the Veda is already always there, but he compiles it. Right? So here he composed it means he put it into words. But the knowledge is already there. It was given to him by the Lord. So he composed it in this form. Does that make some sense? A learned Brahmin must carefully study them, and he must duly instruct his pupils in them. A Brahmin who studies these institutes and faithfully fulfills the duties prescribed herein is never tainted by sins arising from thoughts, words, or deeds, because his body, mind, and words is always engaged. He has a duty to perform for his body, for his mind, for his words at all times, all places, all circumstances. So therefore, then, he's never overcome by sin, because he knows what he should do. Does that make some sense? In this work, so now he's describing the work, in this work, the sacred law has been fully stated, as well as the good and bad qualities of human actions, and the immemorial rule of conduct, to be followed by all the four varnas. The rule of conduct is a transcendent law, whether it be taught in the revealed text or in the sacred tradition. Hence, the twice-born man who possesses regard for himself should be always careful to follow it. So he's saying it's transcendent means it's always there. Transcendent means it transcends the time, place, and circumstance. So this idea that it's Kali Yuga, it's modern times, we're in the West, you know, we're different, we're Westerners, you know, all these things that we're above the law. No, it's the opposite. The law is above us. The law is transcendent. Otherwise we say, oh, we don't have to follow all these things because of this. Because I'm a Malecha, because I'm born in the West, because it's Kali Yuga, because I'm, you know, a Westerner and all this. Therefore, I don't have to follow this. So that means by those qualities, we're transcendent. You know? You see the logic that's being used? No, it's the law is transcendent. Now the whole point is where situations where the details of the conditional law doesn't apply, we can apply the constitutional law. Right? But the conditional law is in pursuance of the constitutional law. Does that make sense? The Varnashram system is there for the purpose of knowing the Lord. That's its only purpose. But we are distracted by our material qualities. Does that make sense? Right? And so we tend to be distracted by them and forget the Lord. So the law is there so that we use all of our distractions in the Lord's service. That way we're tricked that our distractions are brought back to the Lord. Right? So the more simple we are, then the more simple the laws need to be applied. The more complex, the more laws we have to use. Does that make sense? You know, if we just say, be nice, then that's good enough. But if someone's more complex, it's, okay, I can understand being nice to people who are nice to me. What about people who are not nice to me? You know what I'm saying? So when that starts to come into play, then the next rules come in. You know what I'm saying? So if you have a simple person, just the principle rules, and that's enough. Or if somebody's very pure. Either one, simple or pure, you can just work on just the principles. You don't have to worry about so many details. Because you follow the principle, you will always get the detail. Okay, so it's the transcendent law. So whether it's in the revealed scriptures, whether it's in the tradition, Tradition meaning the smriti, revealed text meaning the shruti. You know, then it will always work. So whether it's in the shruti, whether it's in the smriti, in other words, whether it's in any of the Vedic literatures, or it's the traditions followed by saintly persons, whatever it is, then by following it, one will be benefited. The Brahman who departs from the rule of conduct does not reap the fruit of the Veda, but he who duly follows it will obtain the full reward. Right? The sages who saw that the sacred law is thus grounded on the rule of good conduct have taken good conduct to be the most excellent root of all austerity. So good behavior is the root of austerity. So whatever one's austerity is, like the Brahmin's austerity is to study and teach. The Kshatriya's austerity is to protect his people. The Vaishya's austerity is to create economic development. The Shudra's austerity is to assist the others. So good conduct is the basis of all that. If you have good conduct, then you can study and teach, you can protect, you can create economic development, you can serve. Otherwise, you can't. So we see that then, so that kind of like ends this whole part here. You know, of establishing the rules, the duties for the men. Right? So the duties of the four varnas and that. Is that the whole root is that good conduct is there. So therefore, study, charity, and performance of sacrifice. Those are going to create good conduct. Right? They're going to help create good conduct. And by good conduct, one can do those. So they nourish each other. Right? Then you can perform your duties properly.
You say good conduct means that you're well established, you're well rooted.
You're well established, you're well rooted, but it just means you have good behavior. Good conduct means your attitude is right, your behavior is right, you're following the rules, you're doing what is you're supposed to be doing. You know? But always on this, looking at what you're supposed to be doing, it has two levels. What I'm supposed to be doing on the conditional level, what I'm supposed to be doing on the constitutional level. Right? So the constitutional can cut the conditional never cuts the constitutional. If it does, then that just means one's at a lower stage of devotional service. If the needs of one's conditional nature are so strong that it cuts your constitutional nature, you know, compromises it, then as long as that's being done to please the Lord, then it's okay. You know? But it's not considered more advanced. As we go, then you'll find the constitutional nature, the conditional nature, shouldn't get in the way of us performing our constitutional nature. It should be assisting. Does that make some sense?
Mm-hmm. What do you find? I find it does get in the way, so what do you do after a long time?
It means you just see that, you know, with the proper understanding, you're performing the conditional natures for the Lord's pleasure. You know, either directly is that before you start the activity, you're doing it to please the Lord, or the results of it you're giving to the Lord, one or the other. And then that will gradually bring you to the point where that'll work nicely. You know, that will gradually purify. That's why the whole system is there, is that it's basically it's a foolproof system. You know, and you know, in here, foolproof meaning we're the fools, right? So it has to be a system that works despite us. So if the attachments are more, then those attachments then are engaged according to the directions of Shastra. You know, and then the results of that are given to Krishna. Right? So that we become purified. So that's what Prabhupada's talking about, dovetailing. You dovetail your nature in Krishna's service. Then with time it comes where then the constitutional nature becomes more prominent, where you are serving Krishna, and the means that you have to serve through Krishna is through your conditional nature, because you don't have your spiritual form and facilities.
So, because it's all Krishnas anyway, it doesn't matter if you're, if it's a material body or a spiritual body, they're both Krishnas. So it doesn't matter which one you serve with. Does that make some sense? So then for the advanced devotee, there's no difficulty. So he's not dealing with his conditional nature. Right? There's a slight fragrance of it left. But that's only so that he won't be without a body. Right? Because the body is a result of karma. So therefore that much is left, just so he can perform his service. Because if you take that away, then, you know, he'll have nothing. You know, so it's really hard to do service, just being 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. You know, it'd be really hard to cook lunch, you know, things like that. You know. Yeah, I mean, you know, just the cauliflower and the knife would be like, you know, millions of times bigger than you. So it would be really difficult. So that's why the body's left, even though it's conditional. I mean, does that make some sense?
So it's just your consciousness that can take you away.
Yeah. Okay. So the consciousness—that's the key—is the consciousness is either elevates or takes us down. That's why it was saying in the yugas, the whole thing is the consciousness. That's why you see it's very systematic how it's presenting. It's the consciousness that's important. Then after that, then it shows, okay, now mankind is there. Right? So it has what the four varnas do. Now of that, then they're performing their duties. Right? But now consciousness is the most important. So therefore the best consciousness is performing one's duties with the desire to know the Lord. Or to please the Lord. Right? Does that make some sense? So it's consciousness is everything. And then it's pointing out here is that now that your duties are going to be your conditional nature is going to be at its best if it's performing its austerities, its natural austerities, right? So either teaching, protecting, economics, or assisting, right? And austerity is based on good character. So your your conditional nature is at its best when it's performing its natural duties in good character. Right? And that's being engaged in the Lord's service. So that's the overlay of the constitutional nature. So by that, then the conditional nature will become purified and the constitutional nature will become prominent. And then with time, then the conditional nature will just evaporate and all that will be left is constitution. So when that happens, then you get your spiritual form. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, it's just a matter of patience. That's what Rupa Goswami says. Utsahan, or enthusiasm, is endeavor with patience. If you keep endeavoring with patience, because things don't happen immediately. You know, it's just like the child goes the first day to school and he expects to come back a big pundit. No, he has to wait. You know. But the other example is the girl. She gets married and, you know, she expects the kid today. No, she has to wait. You know, so all they see is they take time. So if one performs one's duties, you know, with intelligence and is patient, then everything comes. But it's just time. That makes sense?
We were just hearing our version of Bhagavatam. It says, Bhakti Yoga dissolves your subtle body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just describing here.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. That's right. The Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedic literatures. But all the Vedic literatures, they all are describing transcendence. But they're doing it in a language that's sometimes so hidden that depending upon who's discussing it, they will see transcendence or not. If they're not interested in transcendence, they won't see it, but they'll have faith in the literature. Right? Because if all you give them is just pure transcendence, then the materialists won't take it. So then what's their chance of being elevated? So it's a gradual process. You know, because the Vedic process on its own, without the direct application of bhakti is very, very slow.
Then slowly, slowly you come up and take up karma, and then after so many lifetimes and gyan, and like this, it just slowly, slowly elevate you. But it doesn't, it's moving you in the right direction, but only bhakti can take you to bhakti. So by coming in contact with the pure devotees, then they can give you that seed of bhakti that will take you beyond. But it's still being performed in connection with seemingly with karma and gyan. Because karma and jnana are just parts of the path of bhakti. But now it's not being performed for the goal of karma or the goal of jnana. No, it's being performed for the goal of bhakti. That's why it's called bhakti. Right? Right? Karma performed for the purpose of devotion, then is karma yoga. Right? Jnana performed for the purpose of devotion is jnana yoga. So that's the whole thing. So dissolves a subtle body means you have to dissolve first. The main thing you're trying to get at there is the mind accepting, being absorbed or attached to the Lord and giving up the identification that I am, you know, of the conditioned nature, that I am this body, that I am the Lord, that I am the enjoyer. You know, Bhoktaram Yagitavasam Sarvalokamheshram Sudidam Sarvabhutanam. These are the big problems. I'm the Lord of all creation. I'm the enjoyer of all creation. I'm the friend of everybody. You know, I'm the big, 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 you know, big guy. So the subtle body, then that's the thing. The problem is the mind, the ego. Intelligence just works in between. Does that make some sense? All right.
Can you perform back to yoga if I was to perform back to yoga, you wouldn't establish a real relationship with the Lord. You can do it just back to yoga, also doing it because Prabhupada's pleased, and it's something you should do.
Means one starts from the intellectual platform by intelligence, see, because you're trying to get to the point where the mind accepts, but until the mind accepts, then you're running just simply on your intelligence. Right? The intelligence says you're supposed to be doing this. So that's Vaidhi Sadhana. When it comes to the point where the mind accepts it, that's where you start stepping into the realm of Raghunuga Sadhana. Because then attachment is there for it. In the beginning there's no attachment. It's a matter of just, you know, it's good. Scriptures say it's obvious, it's logical. You've seen the examples. You look around in your life, you can see it, you know, just by perception. You know, based on shabda, you can perceive it. So therefore, you do it like that, with faith that it's going to give you that result. You know, so that's why faith has to be there. You have to have faith in something transcendental, something sublime. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then you do it. You just know that by doing this, and you see, you know, you follow the sadhana, and you feel better. You know, you feel happier, and then because of habit, then we don't follow it, and then we feel worse, right? Yeah, but the point is by intelligence, and if we can keep ourselves in that position, then with time we change the habit, and then we get a taste for it, and then it changes. As soon as there's taste, then the attachment naturally comes, right? As soon as there's taste, that taste develops into attachment. That's automatic. You know, you look at something, you're not sure, then if you do it and it's okay, you like it, then that'll turn into attachment. But you have to perform it long enough to perform that, to give rise to that desire, you know, that taste. If that doesn't come, then it won't happen. Does that make some sense? So that means you have to perform it properly, in proper association, right, with faith. So you see, it's just each one of the levels of devotional service sits on top of the other. So that's the thing, it's a complete science. It's consistent. There's nothing inconsistent in the whole devotional science. So that's the point, is that therefore, then, all other scriptures in that we have to study in the same light, that it's not inconsistent. Right? It's not inconsistent with the conclusions given in the Bhagavatam. Right? So the point is, you follow the Bhagavatam by, in other words, by any of the processes, you'll dissolve. So if you can just hear and chant and remember, that's the easiest. Right? So then do that, it'll dissolve everything. But if not, then you do the other aspects. Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanam, like this. It means all these ones are there. So whatever it takes to get that full surrender. Does that make some sense? So you're fully absorbed, and then automatically it will dissolve all these things.
Still, although the Vedas are slow, Bhakti gives you a strong goal. It still takes time.
It still takes time because the distance you're going is very far. And if you just have to get from here to the heavenly planets, it's not that far. Or from here to Brahman, it's not that far. But here to Goloka, that's a little more distance. Naturally, if you want to look at it from that way. But at the same time, it's because it's more powerful, it can take you quicker. So technically, to get the results of bhakti are actually easier and quicker than to get the results of karma and jnana. Because it's just a matter of the mind accepting it. It doesn't actually have anything to do with what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you're doing it in the right consciousness. Then you get bhakti from it. The conscious being to please the Lord. Karma, there's specific things you have to do, and you can only do exactly that. You can't do something else. Jnana also, it's specifically fixed, and you can only do that. You can't do something else. The bhakti, you can do anything as long as it's connected to the Lord. And then you'll be purified and get bhakti. That's why it's the superior system. Because it's coming from outside the material world. It descends into the material world. And therefore it touches onto the elements of karma and jnana for use in bhakti, as being dovetailed in bhakti. But it's separate from them, because it's descended into them. They're just forms, but it's the life. Does that make some sense? Because activity has to be performed, knowledge has to be there. So those two have to be there. But in them being there, then, what did I say? Yeah, it means they're just activities. Knowledge and activities has to be there. Otherwise, how do you do something? Because knowledge means the senses. Right? The knowledge runs the senses. So that's the whole point. You know, it's like it was Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. You're engaging your senses in for the pleasure of the Lord's senses. That means your intelligence has to be used. But engagement means it's activity. So activity performed with knowledge to please the Lord. That's the system. So it's a combination of the three. Activities, karma, with knowledge, jnana, for pleasure of the Lord, bhakti. Right? Krishna makes that point many, many, many times in Gita. No? Yes.
When I came to you, you were explaining about brahmanas doing sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Means they'll do their own sacrifices, but they will do for others. Or let's say they'll do their own worship and they'll do worship for others. You know, like that. Means that they do these things. Just like you want to do some kind of a sacrifice. You'll have a Brahmin come and do it for you. You generally don't do it yourself. Like that. Yeah. Does that make sense? You could do, but many times you have someone else do it for you.
the six principles of Brahmanas, is very similar to those given by Rupa Goswami, the Nati Pratigrih Nati Padashambhika. Also, to reveal heart to others, also to inquire, listen from others, and to feed devotees and to accept prasadam from others.
So which one are you taking as the sacrifice?
The sacrifice,
it means inquiring and giving. Okay, that's knowledge. That's knowledge.
Giving prasadam and accepting.
Well, it says giving gifts, accepting gifts. And then the prasad, I guess prasad's. That's the great, that's the sacrifice. That's the yagya, prasadam yagya. Yeah, I think that most devotees could get into this. This explanation, yeah, because the point is the Vaishnava platform is the Brahminical platform, but because conditional nature is still there, then for economics' sake, one will look at what is the best way to find one's economics. Does that make some sense? That's the only thing that's the only consideration that's going on there. Means Vaishnava is Brahman automatically. His Brahman is one who knows Brahman. Right? So we know Krishna, so that means they know Brahman. But when it comes to their economics, then they'll have a particular condition, gross and subtle body, that are suited to for their own particular economics. You know what I'm saying? So a Brahman has a certain way. He is happy gaining his money. Kshatriya another, Vaishya another, Shudra another. But as far as the ashram duties, it's the same. Because they're all Brahmins on that devotional platform. So even the Vedic system, there's no separate ashram dharma given for Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, and Shudras. And it's the same system. But varna duties, that's different. The ashram duties are the Brahman's varna duties. But the kshatriya, vaishya, and shudra, then it's separate. But even the serve is part of ashram duties, so even the shudras is included in there. But he doesn't perform all the things that the Brahman does. Because there isn't the interest. You know what I'm saying? He'd rather just, you tell me what to do, I do it. You know? And he knows his field, and then within the field he's comfortable, and he functions within that and does whatever needs to be done. But beyond that is not, because there's no need. For economics, why does he have to think beyond that? There's no need. Someone else will think about that. And he can absorb his mind in thinking about Krishna and all these kind of things. For the Vaishya, he has the brain for thinking beyond that, how to create the economics. The Kshatriya has the brain how to create the protection. The Brahman has a brain how to create education. Does that make sense? But a Shudra doesn't. You tell him what to do. Show him the field and what to do in that field, and then he'll do it. He doesn't have to think beyond that. So he's satisfied.
So one can say it's different varnas. It's just like different levels of consciousness according to one's karma.
It means that's the conditional consciousness, but it's not the transcendental level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So as I'm saying, when it comes to economics, there's a difference. But when it comes to ashram, there's no difference. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't choose who gives Bhagavatam class by one's varna. But if you want to decide who's going to run the temple shop or who's going to do the administration, that you may choose varna. Who's going to be a full-time pujari or a teacher like that? You know, who's going to drive the car around all day? You know, like that. Because the person who can do economics, why would he waste his time driving the car around all day? He can hire someone to drive the car around all day. He'd sit down and make money. You know what I'm saying? And the kshatriya drives around his car all day, how is he going to take care of the people he's got to protect? Unless driving around has something to do with protecting. If you're driving around in your car all day, how are you going to educate people? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can put a microphone and talk while you drive, of course, but It would be just, it's much more easy to just sit down and not be distracted by driving. You know? I guess, or if you get a big semi and just put a microphone in everyone, can just seats, everyone can just sit in there. Classes on the move, right? Very interesting. Yeah, you drive the truck up, you know, from one city to the next, and then they get out, and then next seminar on the way back, and you just time it so all those people, when they go back, then they get the second one, and then they come up, and sure, you can work it out, have a nice place, that mobile educational unit. I mean, I'm saying, but it's not the best thing for it. But if this driving needed to be done, and somebody drives around all day, then they're perfectly absorbed. And they just have to think of Krishna, and that's it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's economics is the deciding factor there. Social status, economics. That's where it makes some difference. Does that make some sense?
Okay, and then yeah. Okay. So, any other questions from this? So. Then, if there's no other questions, we'll end here. So on Friday, then we'll go through the 25 topics of the sacred law and then finish the whole section on creation and start with the Ashram Dharma. Like that. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Sanyasai Gaura Premanandi.